This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt, Brett here today. Brett, we got, of course, the Steiner coming in here a little bit later on. We'll talk to him about some of the national news we have for the day. How have you been today?
Oof, busy today.
Really?
Well, we got a new mic in the studio, and then we're doing some other maintenance. Yeah, so
let me try this out.
Let's hear those tones
there
in there.
You go.
I'm gonna go a little public radio style and talk.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Oh, no, no. We just heard Brahms. That was his fourth concerto in E-flat. That was a lovely piece. He wrote that as his mind was taken by syphilis. Well, they all were. I mean, you look back on there, they like the ladies. I'm just going to say it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I went on out. I decided, okay, because I know that they open up museums and some attractions to limited capacity. And it was interesting when I did the two times I went to the Mall of America when they were open, I took a time to look and say, okay, I want to go at this time because they're going to be off hours. And it was just fine. At no point did they even get really even close to anyone else in that place. It started getting busy the second time I went there, but that was during the holiday season, not a big surprise. But we had left before things got bad, which is the choice you have as an individual. You don't have to stay there if you don't want to. Today, I decided, you know, because one of the things I've always done is I've always taken the kids out and we've done stuff. And when they were younger, it was the Children's Museum. We would go to that a lot. Science Museum, Minnesota Zoo, Como Zoo. Eventually started going into the MIA, into the Walker Art Center, the Wiseman. We just go – we go and do as many of these things as possible because, I mean, we have a lot of great things in town. The Arboretum, definitely want to include that in on the list. I took them today to Como Zoo over there, and it was just – it was a very nice trip. Now, the way they have set up Como Zoo – now, first of all, I want to tell you, outside of one time when I was in the sunken garden at the conservatory, kind of like I sound like I just inserted myself in the Clue game. I was holding a metal butt. There was a body. I'm not sure exactly what happened. Anyway, but no, I was in the sunken garden in the conservatory and a parent was having trouble with a kid. And so they kind of came a little close. Outside of that, at no point did I even come across anyone. Most of the time I was by myself, or me and my daughters were by ourselves, and we did not have any problems. And so you go in and you have to walk a very specific serendipitous route, but it's cool because you see pretty much everything. You go through that first little tropical area with the fish and the tarantula and the ants and the sloth, and then you come back out and then you go out into the zoo. Go to the monkey hut, because monkey hut's just fun to say. Went to the monkey hut. Then you cut over to zebras, and then over to giraffes and ostriches. Kind of go down by the big cat. You can't go down by the wolf. They won't let you get down by the wolf there. And you go by the tigers and the cats. And a lot of these animals were really active, because where'd you guys been? I mean, I think that was kind of the mentality I was getting, the vibe I was getting from those cats. Come back around, went past the reindeer. The reindeer were active, which was cool to see. Polar bears were inside, which, you know, come on, really? I mean, now you open the doors when it's 80 in summer for these things, but it's 14 degrees out. Wind. This is their mojo, and they're not out.
Those are some fair weather polar bears there.
Yeah. It's like Minnesotans that moved to Arizona after a little while. I'm not going out. You see, I need a winter jacket. It's 75. Yeah, sure thing. then you go back through, you go past the penguins, the puffins, the seal, the sea lion, through past their brand new, they got that brand new seal bay they're doing there. You go back through, then you go through the conservatory, and then you they dump you kind of out on the very, be the far eastern side of the conservatory. So you got to walk all the way back outside, back to the car. But it's a really good idea to do it that way because you rarely came across anyone. And they've got limited amount of people. You have to register online before you can go. You have to have a reservation before you can get in. But, you know, we were able to kind of go out and do it. It was just delightful. And like I said, a lot of animals were really active. It was really cool to see that. A little chilly, but at no point. I mean, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop to, like, turn some corner and there's, like, 50 kids. And it never happened. As a matter of fact, there are most parents, I think, because it was so cold. And, of course, Como is mostly outside. As far as the zoo goes, and you cannot visit that zoo without going outside right now, that I think most of the people, a lot of people maybe with little kids avoided it. I was expecting to go into the conservatory and then just, you know, be, you know, kind of swarmed by seniors because I've had that happen. It's like, oh, no, it's a flock of them. All right. Just stand still. They'll move on. I mean, I got some pretty good shots in the conservatory because there was no one there. There was no one there.
Is it always like that in the winter, or is this pretty unusual?
It was one of the last stops we made last year before everything shut down. That was actually one of the last trips. Might have been the last trip I made last spring. And we had I was trying to get some photos of my wife and my youngest daughter, and to do that, to get it in their conservatory, we had to be there right at 10 o'clock as soon as they opened. We went basically almost sprinted in there because within 10 minutes, the place is pretty packed. And it's easy to see why. It's you forget. Go walk into that building and you forget what fresh, clean air smells like until you're around the ferns and the palms and it's sweet and you want to just gobble it up. Oh, my God. So did that, and then, of course, you end up by the Japanese gardens, the little the bonsai trees and all that stuff. Very cool. So we did that, and I want to encourage people to try to get on out. Now, if you are not comfortable, this is not about forcing anyone. You do what you're comfortable with. And at some point, I got to try to start getting back into doing some of these things. But I'm like pretty much most people. I'll try it. I'm not going to go. I'll get my food to go from the restaurants. I'll go to the Eat Local Minnesota restaurants. I'll get my food to go. I don't feel comfortable sitting in restaurants. I sure don't feel comfortable sitting in a bar. But there are some things I am willing to try and willing to go out there and give a chance to see how they're doing. And with the new protocols from Governor Walz, Como Zoo is absolutely fine. And you get to see a lot of animals. The orangutans are out. Gorillas are out. It's a good time. And it's a cute little zoo, by the way. I always liked Como. It's a cute little zoo. And so I want to encourage people to kind of get out at your comfort level. Some places, grab some snowshoes and some crampons, and you can go on out into the parks still. I mean, it's – by the way, that is the accessory, crampons, which, the things you put on your shoes?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Crampons. Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay. I don't judge, Brett. I don't. crampons, you put them on. A lot of people are using them, especially like on the south sides of lakes where it doesn't get a lot of sun right now. So it's pretty icy. That's the new accessory. I've never seen so many people wearing crampons in my life, so. But snowshoes, cross-country skiing, whatever you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable and you want to stay home, more power to you. Enjoy it. Have fun. Plan for your gardens. Plan for your, if you're going to plant some plants this spring, get ready for that. Maybe do some painting. There's a lot of things you can do. But I'm going to start trying to venture out a little bit. Como Zoo is definitely, I think, safe. But once again, you have to pre-register before you go. Knowing you can't register at all at the gate, and just anticipate, make the effort to try to stay distance. And you have, by the way, your mask is on the entire time. Inside, outside, no matter what, you have to have a mask on during the visit to Como
Zoo. That's what I was going to ask. That might be what's driving some people away, saying, well, are we going to run into the guy that doesn't wear the mask out there? But, yeah, if they're doing a good job enforcing that, making sure people are covered, sounds like a fun time.
Well, I don't think you're going to get into too much. I would be surprised. I got to be honest with you. I'd be a little bit surprised if you did see that, because, you know, let's face it, most of the people that are in the metro, not all, most of the people in the metro, I think, understand one of the reasons why Minnesota hasn't imploded, Minneapolis, St. Paul hasn't been as bad as, say, New York and stuff, is because I think there's an appreciation and understanding that the medical community says something, you probably should do that. We live in a place with really good medicine. And in the same sense as if a carpenter comes in and tells me, yeah, you need to do this or else your house is going to fall in, I'm going to do it because I'm going to trust him. You know, that's just if I hire a guy to come on in here and do some roof work and he comes across a problem and tells me about it, I'm going to take him, you know, okay, thank you. If it sounds a little outrageous, maybe I'll check it out. But I trust experts in their fields when that's kind of what you should do. I will say my experience has been the more belligerent that you are without a mask is usually the more rural you're getting. And to a point, I can get that. If you live on a farm or if you live in a house where your nearest neighbor is 400 yards to your right, then while you're in your yard, you know, you're probably not wearing a mask hardly at all. And so it doesn't seem like it's something that you have to do. But the reality is I don't think a lot of those people are heading into the Como Zoo, frankly. I don't think that's – you know, my experience is most people who live well out of the city or in the tertiary suburbs, they think going into the deep, dark city is going to Ridgedale. You know, that's – oh, I was in the hood. Where are you? Where is that? By Bed Bath & Beyond? Is that where that's at? Really? Wow. Barely escaped with your life by the Wetzel's Pretzels, huh? Okay. But that's a lot of people. It's like when I was down in Iowa and people would say, I went up to the cities this weekend. Where'd you go? And I'd go, hey, where'd you go? I'm from the cities. Where'd you go? Oh, I went to Burnsville Center. You didn't go to the cities. You went to Burnsville. And they'd always get mad when I say it. But it's the truth. You went to Burnsville. You didn't go. It's not like you went to Nicollet Mall. You went down to the river. You didn't go downtown. You went to go to Rice Park in St. Paul. You didn't go to the Midway and catch a Minnesota United game. You went to Burnsville. Where'd you go in New York? Trenton. No, you didn't go to New York. You went to Trenton, New Jersey. Just because they have flights there that somehow you can take a train into the city doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein does join us, like I said, in a little bit. Let's take a break here. Come on back. We'll get into some of the news of the day when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Before we get into Jeff Stein here in just a moment, I want to take a few moments on the Capitol rioters because there have been some interesting takes here. I don't know if you saw the video that I posted earlier today from the Wall Street Journal. They specifically follow the Proud Boys that day. And clearly the Proud Boys were being coordinated. There was a coordinated planned attack by the Proud Boys. The one of the things which is really interesting about the Wall Street Journal's video on this is that clearly they were the instigators, that their job seems to have been to show the rest of the crowd coming towards them from the rally, because they weren't really at the rally to begin with. I'm not saying there weren't some Proud Boys out there at the rally. The Proud Boys, while the rally was going on, rallied behind the Capitol on the other side of the Capitol building, and then were the part of the first group of people to attack the police lines. And they were clearly coordinating some level of attack here. If you haven't seen the video, I posted it on the social media pages. I highly encourage you to go look at it. The one of the things, too, when you put that in conjunction with the story from last Tuesday from the Wall Street or from the Washington Times or the Washington Post, The Washington Post, it basically said that these people were clearly getting fed information from inside the building, which is, once again, we have to figure out who on the inside was basically trying to get as many congressmen and senators killed as possible. That has to – that those questions have to be answered. The USA Today, and I just saw this right before I came on the air, so I will have to – I'll get this posted a little bit later on. They have put out a database of everyone who's been arrested. Yay, Maddie, happy.
What kind of clown car is this roundup of
all? It is. It is basically – it is a delight. And I've been waiting for this because we need to have this. You need to identify the traitors. You need to identify the traitors, and they are terrorists, and that is that. And the USA Today has got a full list of everyone who's been arrested so far. Your names will always be mud. Always be mud. That being said, we are now starting to learn of the damage done. And I want to remind all the people, right, yesterday, the Senate said that Trump should not be held accountable. And once again, if you go back to the Wall Street Journal post about the Proud Boys, they specifically juxtapose Trump's comments from the debate back in October, stand back and stand by. And they say that that clearly was a encouragement for the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys themselves were very happy about that, and they were waiting for their opportunity. And once again, when you look at all this stuff here, there's enough coordination to believe this might have even gone to the White House. That this entire it wasn't just instigating the crowd, that there was far more planning and organizing going on here than remains than we have seen, and that this was, you know, and we've talked about it. I've talked about it. This sure seems like it was Trump's attempt to try to overthrow the government. And I think sometimes we think Trump is too stupid to kind of try to pull something like this off. But I think I'm going to be surprised. I'm not going to be surprised if we all of a sudden discover, indeed, direct connections between the terrorist groups that attacked the Capitol and actual communications with the White House describing what they're about to do. And that would be – think about that as far as historical level. I don't think we've ever had – we've had criminals in the White House. I don't think we've had terrorists in the White House before, but we'll have to find out. Needless to say, this all happened, and the senators, all of whom would have been killed outside of probably Ted Cruz and Holly, if the mob had gotten them, 45 of them voted to say, hey, Trump doesn't deserve to be held accountable for this mob. Well, let me read this to you. This is from the United States Police, Capitol Police Labor Committee. Capitol Police officers believe that the leadership betrayed our mission. Acting Chief Pittman testified yesterday before the House Appropriations Committee regarding the U.S. Capitol Police response to the insurrection on January 6th. In his testimony, Acting Chief Pittman stated, by January 4th, the department knew that the January 6th event would not be like any of the previous protests held in 2020. We knew that militia groups and white supremacist organizations would be attending. We knew that some of these participants were intending to bring firearms and other weapons to the event. We knew that there was a strong potential for violence and that Congress was the target. The Capitol Police Officers Union has responded saying, this is a startling admission by Acting Chief Pittman and a disclosure that he angered and shocked the rank and file officers at the Capitol Police. Union Chairman Gus Papathanasiou says, we have one officer who lost his life as a direct result of the insurrection. Another officer was tragically taken his own life. Between USCP and our colleagues at the Metropolitan Police Department, we have 140 officers injured. I have officers who were not issued helmets prior to the attack. They sustained brain injuries. One officer has two cracked ribs and a smashed spinal disc. One officer is going to lose an eye, and another was stabbed with a metal fence stake. He says, the disclosure of the entire executive team, former chief's son, now acting chief Pittman, and assistant chief Thomas, knew what was coming but did not better prepare us for potential violence, including the possible use of firearms against us, is unconscionable. And I would agree with that. I think that there are some clear questions about the leadership of the Capitol Police. I think there are some clear questions about the Pentagon and their lack of response and their unwillingness to respond and send in the troops when the Capitol was under attack. But I want to take some time here to call out all you Republican cowards. You're all Republicans who have spent the last few years basking in this false image that you're pro-cop. Oh, we stand by the police. Bob Kroll played you like a fiddle. He basically knew you wanted to do cosplay and pose with the Minneapolis Police Department cars with angry cops saying, "We're keeping those black people in line," that sort of thing. You wanted that for your campaign literature. So you guys have pandered to the Minneapolis police. And my God, did you guys, for about a week or so, you say, "Well, what happened to George Floyd should never have happened." But it didn't take you long to get back into your, "Hey, just because, yeah, we've got a few dead black people doesn't mean we have to change things." I mean, that was the way you guys were. And you have been like that. Oh, you guys are the liberal left. You hate the cops. We love them. You guys on the right, you guys pandering. I mean, we just had a vote here in the Minnesota House where we had 8 votes no and 14 cowards who didn't even try to vote from the Republican Party, who could have condemned the violence, condemned the right-wing terrorists, condemned the people who, once again, if I can read this correctly, they had 140 officers injured. Officers were not issued helmets. Some have sustained brain injuries. One officer has 2 cracked ribs and a smashed spinal disc. One officer is going to lose his eye, and another was stabbed with a metal fence stake, along with one dying on the scene, as well as another committing suicide. You cowards on the right, you hypocrites. You sit there and you claim we're pro-cop. Well, here is your chance to show it. Condemn the right-wing terrorist groups who attack the Capitol Police and attack the Capitol and try to overthrow the government and try to hang Mike Pence. You cowards. You guys aren't pro-cop. You're just opportunistic fools. That's all you really are. As you sit there and you try to portray yourself as some sort of moral majority. Shut up. Shut up. Unless you've got the guts to come on out here and say, "You know what? You know, and hey, I'm not going to condone your over-exaggeration of the threat from Black Lives Matter and Antifa," especially when pretty much most of the people arrested for violence that happened in the aftermath of George Floyd were white supremacists, not from the city, for God's sakes. But at least I would have a smidge of respect for you if you came out and said, "Hey, you know what? I stood up for the police when the left-leaning guys were protesting. I sure as heck am going to stand up for the police when right-wing guys are protesting." I'd have some level of respect for you. Instead, you're a bunch of freaking cowards. And all police departments, you should be paying attention to this. Because over the next year or so, I'm going to expect more of this right-wing buffoonery to go on. More of these right-wing attacks. They might attack the state capitol. They might attack, businesses. They might attack politicians or judges or courthouses. They could go after county courthouses. And they will kill cops. And I just want to make sure you do know that the Republican Party, who has insisted, "Oh, we snuggle up here," is going to look at who kills the cop before they make the determination on whether they're going to condemn the people who killed the cops. Because that's what the Republican Party is today. The Republican Party is a bunch of people who are more concerned about snuggling up to terrorists, traitors, racist, white supremacists, and freaking Nazis than they are for actually having any kind of consistency in their policies. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Stein, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Daily Show is the Iowa Business Report he does down there in Iowa, and the Iowa Politics Report he takes care of at KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hey, Jeff.
Matthew, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just for everyone out there, that letter from the union where it described the damage done to the Capitol Police, Jeff had actually sent me that note. You know, Jeff, and I put some things together. I want to get your thoughts on this. Lindsay, you got this note here. I mean, clearly the police were under attack. The Capitol was under attack. Democracy was under attack. The Wall Street Journal's video that shows the Proud Boys' actions that morning and through the day clearly show there was a coordinated effort. The Washington Post story from a week ago talking about how these people were getting coordinated instructions from someone inside the Capitol, either a congressperson, a senator, or an aide, was obviously clearly trying to give them as much information as possible. And the fact that we now know that the Trump organization, Trump campaign, and the White House was funneling money that put on the rally which led to the storming of the Capitol, the terrorist attack on the Capitol building. You know, the more I keep thinking about this, and I know you're kind of one of these people that, you know, is this really worth the country's time to try to impeach Trump a second time? The reality is the more you hear about this, the reality is that this was coordinated. This went on. I can't recall of any other time in history, and maybe you do know, barring the Confederates before the Civil War, that you actually had people working against the American government within the Congress itself.
Well, what I think really makes this is the fact that after the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, members of the Senate, members of the House came back and concluded their work counting the Electoral College votes. The number of Republican senators who gave up the fight, who said, after what I just experienced here, we're going to vote to certify, that to me was surprising. It was a large number, to the point that someone in the House was going to object to a state but couldn't find a senator to sponsor it, and that's why the thing did wrap up when it did. The point is, those people who were there, I've been a bit critical of the hypocrisy of saying, okay, fine, you didn't care when it was outside Capitol Hill. Now all of a sudden you do. But here's why I'm softening that. Because of the fact that as you hear the injuries that were sustained, I mean, there are tipping points, correct? I mean, there are points where you just say, okay, that's it. Now, I will still maintain that it may not be a good idea to do an impeachment trial, and here's why. Because of the fact that it does have some questionable constitutionality, would it not be better to do something like censure? And there is the movement that I'm understanding on both sides of the aisle, people working together to say, is there some way we can get a sure deal? It's almost like a plea bargain in a criminal case. I go back to my time as a criminal defense attorney where you would say, do you run the risk of going forward with a trial with an uncertain result, or do you take a sure thing? But I'll tell you, the thing I forwarded you, which you shared with the audience, that's breathtaking. And that's, again, why I say a number of these people on Capitol Hill who were staunch defenders of the president kind of toned it down. And I bet it's because they saw this and they knew more than we did at the time. And now we're all learning about it. And that is truly frightening.
Two things in one. Trump's been impeached a second time. I mean, that's not debatable. The trial is what is going to be going on in the Senate.
Yes.
So he's already been impeached. But the reality is, you mentioned the word plea. The moderate Republicans particularly are pleading with Democrats saying, you know, don't go through this. And from everything I've read from the constitutional lawyers, this is very legal for them to do something of this nature. They themselves quite literally pointed at the 14th Amendment saying, you can't do this. You know, which, I mean, those were the amendments, I think, that were passed in the days after the Civil War saying, you know, because there was that concern. You know, you can't be a former pro-Confederacy politician who's still working for the Confederacy while in the U.S. government. And that's why those laws apply. I think the reality is this: you're not going to have the same impeachment trial that happened, regardless of whether you think it's going to it should happen or not. It's going to happen. You're not going to have the same impeachment trial because you're going to have the Democrats setting the rules, not Mitch McConnell. And as you just said, you know, you start reading some of these quotes of, oh, they were getting fed information from inside. They were clearly coordinated. There's, you know, you already have some people starting to flip on this. If you get enough information, and especially if arrows start pointing to some of Trump's closest allies within the Congress who have already been kind of, you know, people are starting to raise a little eyebrows against guys like Gosar and Mo Brooks. And that, you know, psychopath from Colorado, whatever her name is. But if, you know,
that narrowed it down, the psychopath from Colorado as opposed to the one from Georgia.
Well, but it tells you a lot. I could just say that the psychopath from Georgia or the psychopath from Colorado, we know exactly who I'm talking about. It's Steve King is the psychopath from Iowa. Just FYI, just in case anyone's missing.
Yeah, he's no longer in there.
I know. But if you look at this, I mean, especially the connections with the financing, I don't know. I understand Republicans are going to not convict him because that's, you know, they would rather all get voted out of office before, you know, going down the Nixon path again.
But it's also a matter of but to that very narrow point that you're almost giving Republicans a way out. First of all, let's go to your first point. Mitch McConnell is not setting the rules. Absolutely correct. And although at this point he seems to be inclined to vote for impeachment, so I'm not sure if you might want him on that side. But look, I think if you said to a sitting U.S. senator who you know, I've heard legal analysts like Jonathan Turley. I respect him. I don't think he is a partisan either direction per se. He doesn't think it's constitutional. Well, you don't think you used to like Turley, didn't you?
Turley has always seemed to have been a guy who will, you know, it's kind of like the Second Amendment. Right to bear arms. Well, you forgot the well-regulated militia part of that. And that's one of the things that the Second Amendment does show. It shows, and the Supreme Court has said, you can regulate guns, that sort of thing. They, if you read the entire Constitution, that it's there. Turley is a guy that seems to have selective memory loss when it comes to stuff that kind of bumps him down the road. But that's just my opinion on him.
That's fair. And here's my only point, that is if you are a sitting member of the U.S. Senate, you might be able to give yourself some cover back home by saying he was already out of office, and so therefore impeachment is to remove someone from office, and so therefore I'm voting against a conviction at the impeachment trial because I think in essence it's a moot point, but he was a bad, bad person. You give them that out. But if you start talking censure, that's a whole different thing because you have different standards in terms of how many have to vote in favor. And I bet you you'd get a lot of people in the old school Republican Party, not the Trump Republican Party, who would sign on to that. Because you cannot make a public statement, Matt, as a U.S. senator saying the president showed bad judgment. He showed bad leadership. I don't think it was high crimes and misdemeanors, but it was bad, 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 bad. Well, then that's censure. I mean, you cannot have it both ways. So in essence, you're almost giving Republicans a way out by saying you're going to go all the way out for a trial when you really could pin them down as saying Trump is a bad person who should be censured. Now, I see it both. I can see the benefits for the nation, frankly, both ways. I see the benefits for the Democrats both ways. But I think there are some weaselly little arguments you can make that actually make it better for Democrats if it's censure because you'd get many more Republicans signing on.
I don't think – you want to know the truth is, no, in my mind, without – you're just asking me personally. It's high crimes and misdemeanors. He clearly coordinated this. And if you watch the speeches that were given before they marched on the Capitol, and especially when you realize that someone within the Congress was helping them – something was going on here that wasn't just a angry mob that, you know, wants, you know, has bought into a bunch of false news about an election. That being
let's take that point because I'm glad you mentioned that. Take that point because it occurred to me today, and we talked about this last week, that I said Trump was being rather silent. And you said, well, yeah, they took away all of his social media, which is true. But during that last week or so, even for him, you know, he had other ways to get messages out. He has been remarkably quiet and subdued, and I don't think it's for a period of self-reflection. I think maybe he was getting some of these same reports. In other words, is there a chance that some of the bluster is kind of filtered away because there might be a thought of, holy cow, people really did die. Holy cow, people have been maimed. And it's the same people that he said, law enforcement, you know, that he would defend till the end. So the point is, I don't know that there's a moment where he looks and says, holy cow, what have I done? I don't believe that, but I do believe there may be a modicum of it, because otherwise, you know,
he's that horrible. I mean, I'm not going to be Susan Collins. Right. I'm not going to be Susan Collins after the first impeachment thing. Well, I'm sure he learned his lesson now. No, he didn't. And he won't, because that's Donald Trump. And I mean, he tried to overthrow the government of the United States to stay in power.
It's a great Susan Collins impression that you do. So, you know, I'm glad you're able to trot it out.
No, I can't do that. But I will say what the more stark realization is. And I mean, this is something I've been talking about, and it's just the reality of it. The Republican Party is so desperate for the racist, the white supremacist, the Nazis, the Proud Boys. They're so desperate for these fringe elements to vote for them that they cannot just outright. I mean, some of them can. Mitt Romney is shockingly looking mildly presidential again, as he basically says, no, there's no debate here. This is bad. But you can't. The reality is there are so many Republicans, and especially the most brazen Republicans in the House are the ones in these gerrymandered districts where that seems to be almost all their voters. The reality is that this is a real problem for them, because this is who their base is. And if they basically go on out there and hold Trump accountable, that base, they already know that base is not going to show up. I mean, in Minnesota, we had Jennifer Carnahan getting mad at Ken Martin. Jennifer Carnahan's the Minnesota GOP chair. Ken Martin's the DFL chair up here. And she got mad at him because he went out there, he's saying you're either a Nazi or you're on the side of democracy. And she's like, how dare you create such a divide? And he's like, what? Now, I'm paraphrasing greatly, but it's basically that was the gist of it. How dare you create division? It's like, you're taking the side of the Nazis here? No.
You're paraphrasing by using the word what? Yeah, that's a paraphrase.
Well, exactly. But I mean, this is a huge problem for the Republicans. Clearly, the problem they have is that if the people who love Trump, who support the racists and support the white supremacists, support the Proud Boys and the Nazis, if they don't show up, they will not win.
Well, okay, first of all, they're politicians, and so they're going to be humping for any vote they can. And the problem is, when you make a deal with the devil, sometimes you have to pay up.
Yes.
And I'm not being flip about that by any stretch.
No, you're not. But it's a matter of fact, it's a spot on point.
Okay. And now, did you see – now, this makes your point, I think, even stronger. Did you see where there was some poll taken, and I believe it or not, but they said, what if there is a new third party that Trump is spearheading? Call it the Patriot Party, whatever these names are that people are snapping up, hoping that Trump will then buy the URL from them. Okay, it's a Patriot Party. It would, first of all, virtually exclusively siphon support from the current Republican Party. Not exclusively, but virtually. And the Patriot Party, as run by Donald Trump, would be the second most popular party in America behind the Democrat Party, the Democrats, and the Republicans would automatically be the number three party. Now, there's nobody in the Republican Party who is figuring this out, because, you know, they think Trump is gone. If, you know, ding dong, the witch is dead. Now it's our party again. It isn't. This is the problem they have. Now, what do you think about this story of House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy going to meet with Donald Trump?
Because I think that story broke the day before he left office, and almost overnight, because that's exactly when it happened. Almost overnight, all of a sudden is, hey, aren't we being a little harsh on the Nazis? And you're like, where is this coming from? And
is CNN as of, I mean, I'd seen it elsewhere. You're right. Jeff Zeleny, CNN, reporting literally minutes ago. The meeting is going to take place in Florida tomorrow, and McCarthy initiated the meeting. Here's the quote from CNN. It's part of an effort to get back into the good graces of the former president. Okay, let me reset, please. The House Minority Leader is traveling to the home base of the now former president to get back into the now former president's good graces while an impeachment trial is scheduled in the United States Senate.
And we should mention 3 weeks ago that if that mob would have gotten McCarthy, he would have been killed too.
So I'm trying to make some sense of this, and I'm not sure I can. I mean, truly, what if you're Kevin McCarthy, where's your upside here? I just don't understand it.
Wait, and one last thing here on this. Portman's resignation, he's not going to run again. You know, is this really just saying that unless you are part of that far-right lunatic fringe and you're perfectly okay with that, you're okay with the Proud Boys and the 3%ers and the Nazis, if you're okay with that, you can stay in the Republican Party. But if you're not, well, you're either going to get primaried and we're going to get rid of you anyway, or you might as well leave on your own. Is that really where we're looking at the standard now for the Republican Party?
Portman, I think, was a matter of it's a concession that the Senate is not going to go back into Republican hands during his next term. In other words, he's saying, all right, I'm now in the minority. There is no path I see toward the Republican Party getting the majority in the U.S. Senate. So why do I want to bang my head against a wall? That's how I view that. Now, is that a part of what you just discussed? Sure. Mm-hmm. You do have other things that are interesting. I mean, Iowa Senator Charles Grassley is 87. He would be 90 when his next term starts. He's on the ballot in 2022. He told me a week ago he had not yet made a decision. It had nothing to do with what was going on in Washington. It had to do with the fact he was 80 whatever years old. So you may see some other retirements not connected to the scenario you laid out. Portman, though, it does sound like, why do I need this aggravation?
Yeah,
I might get primaried. I'd have to capitulate to this side of the party I don't want. We're not going to be in the majority anyway. How about I just collect my pension?
And let's face it, all of these guys, unless they are the most ardent Trump supporters, are about to get primaried. And this is going to make a mess for the Republican Party over the next 4 years for sure. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk about the new President Biden and some of the changes that have happened, which have actually been refreshing reminders of what the presidency used to be like. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, your take. I saw Press Secretary Jen Psaki, I believe is how you say it, P-S-A-K-I, Jen Psaki.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to be, okay, first day aside, every day she's done a press conference, it feels so, you don't realize what the press department and the Trump White House, how much of a clown car that was. Until you see someone, and this is not just a Democrat thing. I mean, W. Bush had some decent. I mean, I didn't agree with like Ari Fleischer and people like that. I didn't agree with the spin they were putting. But at least they would actually talk to the press. It wasn't this, just insult fest and lie fest. Psaki, boy, Jen Psaki, she is top notch. It's a nice, refreshing reminder of what the presidency is supposed to be, especially when it comes to relating to the press itself.
What you are seeing with the entire Biden White House is a return to pre-Trump normatives, if you will.
Yes.
And you're right. That transcends political party. Now, frankly, I don't care for her. I don't think she comes to the table with great command. That's not a political statement. There have been many other Democrats who have done better. And I'm certainly willing to give somebody the first month, for crying out loud. I'm not going to overanalyze it. But it is just a very different thing. And they are sticking to message. This is one of the things that the folks who tried to run the Trump press office initially, they were saying, all right, Mr. President, here's what we do. There's a theme of the day, and that way we control the narrative. And they would sketch out all of these things, and it would be infrastructure, and it would be labor, and it would be all these things. And he'd tweet something at 6 in the morning and blow the whole thing to smithereens. And what you have seen is every single day that she's been out there, she's been out there with people. And it's like, today, it's climate change day. This day, it's monetary policy day. And they are sticking to message. Mm-hmm. And again, that is frankly, corporate communication 101.
Well, and I think she's doing a great job personally. And I love the question about Sarah Huckabee Sanders running for Arkansas governor. And he says, what do you think about this? He said, where is the concern level for President Biden on that? He said, and she looked, she goes, you mean the Republican primary for the Arkansas governor in 2022? It's pretty low on the old horizon right now. I thought that was a really nice rebuttal. But even Biden.
No, I agree with that. But some of these questions are so inane.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
that kind of a response.
Well, and is it just that the media had to dumb down everything so much in the past that it had to be who could grunt the loudest? Because, I mean, I watched Biden when, who is a Ducey's kid, was screaming something at him on Fox News when he got to us. He was like, what did you talk to the Russian premier about? He said, we talked about you. He says hi. It was off the cuff. It was there. But it was kind of one of those things. I was like, oh, that's right. This guy can think on his feet and he can move and he can, he doesn't mind talking to the right wing guys, but they had better be prepared for a president who's not going to just take stuff from them. He's going to throw it back at them.
Well, and I will tell you, having covered Biden just a very little bit in Iowa, no expert by any stretch, he's got an edge. And you have seen a little bit. And that edge can turn. Not in a bad way. I mean, not any more than anybody else. Okay. But he's got this, the image of Genial Joe, and I've seen him rip a few people. And, again, I thought the comment to the Fox reporter was hilarious. What did you talk about? We talked about you. Just like the same time. Do you remember Biden was on the bicycle and they yelled and they said, have you picked your vice president? Yeah, it's going to be you. it's.
And when he does.
If Trump had tried that, he couldn't have pulled it off.
Oh, he can't because and you've seen the juxtaposition with Fox or Daily Show showed he just yelled at people. But Biden, when he does get mad, he gets it's a pointed anger, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And it's not an eruption around the entire White House, which we've been led to believe was the case for the previous 4 years. That is true.
Once again, Jeff Stein, find his books over at Next Chapter Books, and the Iowa Politics Report will publish a little bit later on. We'll also get this spotlighted as well. Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Talk to you next week, sir.
Talk to you next week. Jeff Stein's kind enough to join us on a Wednesday. We'll take a break. Come on back for hour two of the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show, hour two on your Wednesday. I know a lot of people out there kind of, eye roll at Jeff. And so, trust me, sometimes I do too. I think that, let's just put it this way. Jeff he tries very hard to be kind of a middle of the road voice at times, but to a fault. And I think there are times, especially when it comes to the Democrats and how bad Trump was, that he almost felt like he had to defend Trump over the last few years. And I don't agree with that. And trust me, I called him out a lot of times. But at the same time, it's like the censure thing. He's not saying Trump should be let go. He's saying Trump should be censored. And I know, you got to convict him in the court. For God's sakes, they're going to kill you all. Well, I'm okay with that. Really?
I get where Jeff's coming from on that, too, but this is such an extreme action that
exactly.
was taken on that day, yeah.
It's the thing which is always funny is that no matter what happens, Trump could have murdered someone with an axe live on television. There already would be 20 senators saying, you guys complain about him lack of exercise. Look at him go now. That would be their argument. It's like, I don't think that's a crime. Is it bad? Yeah. I'm not for axe murderers. But, and they would put the but in there. So no matter what, there was always going to be a level of this where you're going to have a bunch of Republicans who are just not ever going to say, yep, all in unison, he should be gone. But I think this is a bad sign for the Republicans because it means you have to go extremist. And the reality is that as much as it was painful to see 74 million people support Donald Trump, 81, by the way, got Biden, 81, that's more than 74. To see that, I think they squeezed every drop of racism that they could out of this country to get to that point. I think that was squeezing every drop of every extremist, every vote out of every compound in Montana and Idaho they could. And that's where they're at. So, you know, what this does tell you is this. Democrats, you had better be starting to make your plans for 2022 and voting. And not sitting there and patting yourself on the back saying, didn't we do a good job? No, 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 no. Take a few weeks. Sure. You know, take the month. Well, maybe. But, you know, you better get your plan in place to start running. Because, I mean, if you haven't seen, these guys are crazy. And if we have another year like 2010 where the Democrats just decide, you know what, we've done enough. We don't need to do anything more. Well, you're going to have a nightmare. And that's just – and trust me, the Republicans are desperate to try to get back in charge of both the House and the Senate. And, you know, can you imagine what they tried to do to Biden in that case? And once again, think about just the court judges, all this stuff. They would say all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute here. I know that we ran through that last Supreme Court justice, but it's 2 years out before an election. We should let the election decide who the next Supreme Court justice is. So that is just who these people are. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Brett, this is going to come as a little bit of a shock for you. Do you know some states have a discrimination board? You know, they basically go out there to try to weed out discrimination within day-to-day, everyday lifestyles and stuff like that. You know, some states have that.
I'm not aware, but it sounds like a good idea to me.
They got one in Alaska. Alaska, you know, you can see Russia from there.
Oh, that's right.
God, where this whole thing started. An Alaska lawmaker was removed from the state's discrimination board after defending a license plate with the text Third Reich on it. And for some reason, the news story felt the need saying, oh, by the way, that's a reference to Nazi Germany. Oh, okay, thanks. Third Reich.
Think about that one for a second.
To be fair, it doesn't say Third Reich. It says Three Reich. But still, it's clear what the impression is. It was like that guy that put out the swear word to Muslims on his license plate up in St. Cloud. I wanted to find that guy. They wouldn't let us know who he was. I wanted that name. According to the Washington Post, most of the state's lawmakers, Alaska state lawmakers, condemned the license plate. Jamie Allard, a member of the Anchorage Assembly, who also serves on the commission designated to investigate discriminatory policies and complaints, argued otherwise. As the Post reports, Aller defended the Nazi-inspired license plate captured on the now-viral photo as she argued a different perspective on the meaning of the personalized text. In a now-deleted Facebook post, Aller claimed, if you speak the language fluently, you would know that is the English definition of the word. The progressives have put a spin on it and created their own definition. No, the progressives didn't do that. World War II did that. World War II put the spin on the Third Reich. To tell you how bad it is, Governor Mike Dunleavy, the Republican governor of Alaska, made the decision to remove Allard from the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. His spokesperson, Jeff Turn, released a statement to address the situation. The comments made by Ms. Allard regarding the license plate controversy have become a distraction for the Human Rights Commission and its mission to ensure equality and fair treatment of all Alaskans. Following her removal, Allard emailed her response to Alaska Public Media, insisting that she was attacked. Attacked, she said. Allard claimed to be in agreement with it being best that she step aside. I appreciate the opportunity to serve Alaskans both on the Anchorage Assembly and previously on the Human Rights Commission. I unequivocally condemn racism in every form and support the commission and the commission at 100%, she said. In light of recent attacks against me, I feel it's best to step aside as the commission can focus on its work and allow me more time to focus on assembly duties. Okay, you cannot say I unequivocally condemn racism when the poster child for racism and discrimination was the Third Reich, was the Nazis. KKK as well, not the best group, but you can't. Yeah. They're trying to legitimize these guys, man.
They're
They're trying to legit. They're trying to say, hey, you know what? They're not just Nazis. They're a wholesome little community social club. It's not the VF frickin' W, man.
They just sit there and think you're defending the Nazis.
No, you don't understand. Yeah. If you read it in the original German, oh, God, really? Yeah. You see, that was what the problem with all the people that were being killed by the Germans. They just didn't read it correctly, you know? It reminds me of the great line from Arrested Development. And when Tobias is handing out his new cards saying that he's a combination analysis therapist, the analrapist, and he goes, oh my God, don't worry. He goes, I'm licensed in both. He goes, it wasn't the spelling I was worried about. Very funny show. Lynette's in Shaska. Let's get her on in here. Welcome on in, Lynette.
Hi, Matt. My question is, if you can't answer this question, maybe someone else can call in. If you're a Republican parent, at what point, I mean, because obviously there's all these good behaviors that you want your kids to have, you know, like being courteous and sharing and not lying and basically not being a jerk. And then at some point, Republicans as adults say, hey, being a jerk and lying and not sharing and being a, you know, and like not wearing your mask and not caring about anybody. What age do Republican parents tell their kids that it's okay now to be a jerk and not care about anybody? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question, Lynette, actually, if you bring up. Thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. You know, I have friends who I don't consider to be loon ball far rightos. I don't think that they are, you know, in cahoots with Nazis. I don't think they're in cahoots with the Proud Boys and the 3%ers, I don't. But yet I see them during this time bellyaching and lamenting about you know, not being able to go to school and how the kid's been robbed because they can't play football. And you know, we should be able to go out to restaurants and stuff. And I don't know. I think you've definitely got a generation of kids right now. I mean, this last year, the impact on families will resonate for decades to come. Not only in how we do business, not only how we do education, but from what our kids have learned here about, you know, about what is important for our society and for our community. It's interesting. My grandmother, who lived to be 103, Gigi, up on the Iron Range, I remember my dad getting mad at me one time when I took food and I didn't eat it. And he said, no, you took food, put it on your plate, you eat it. And I'm like, okay. And I could tell my dad was angry. And he pulled me aside and he said, your grandmother went through the Great Depression. She remembered the years when people were starving to death. People were skin and bones on the street. She remembers that. She remembers the Hoover towns on the outskirts of Virginia, Minnesota. She remembered all the bad that happened. And she also remembered that you don't take food that you're not going to eat. And so you ate food. I mean, the impact on that, on her entire life, those few years, resonated for the rest of her life on that issue. You are going to – I think that one of the things that this pandemic has done is it is woken us up to how fragile our society really is. I've pointed out numerous times, I mean, beyond Trump and this stuff, our medical system was not ready for this. Not because that there aren't a lot of great doctors and nurses. Absolutely. The people in these hospitals doing this on a daily basis are angels and saints. It's the corporations that run these hospitals that shut down rural hospitals because they weren't profitable enough, that got rid of ICU beds because they're just taking up extra space, that made the entire, you know, most of our research about hair pills and erection dysfunction. I mean, that is what was the failure. And we have to understand we can't just allow that to snap back because the medical industry mentality is, oh, well, if we another have another pandemic, we'll just have the U.S. Treasury print out a bunch of money for us and then we'll take care of it. It's a bad idea. When it comes to families and kids, don't think for one second that you aren't seeing the consequences. The consequences of the actions and the behaviors of adults today will resonate for years to come. And I'm not saying it's a majority. I think, once again, I've been one of the people that's been very clear. I think it's a definitive minority. And not all people who are Republicans are going without face masks and are trying to run to the alibi bar and trying to have parties and bellyaching. There's a lot of Republicans who are, you know, they understand this is serious and they're taking it seriously, whether it's because they've got a family member who's sick, got an elderly person who's vulnerable in their family, or they've lost someone, for God's sakes. But you definitely, we are going to have, not only are we going to have repercussions for decades to come on the consequences of coronavirus as far as just the health. I mean, the long-term health issues we're going to be dealing with coronavirus we're not even beginning to start wrapping our head around. But the mental crisis, especially from the people who feel that they're entitled and they don't have to do things, I think that's going to be a hard thing for us to deal with. Very similar to the woman who attacked the kid in New York City, the woman from California who was in the hotel who insisted the kid had her phone, which he didn't, but she saw a black man with a phone and tackled him and threatened him. And it wasn't until then that the hospital staff would say, well, no, here's the Uber driver who said you left your phone in his car. Doesn't sound like she apologized. She ran out of the building. And even still today, from everything I've seen about her, she still thinks that she is somehow been wronged by people holding her accountable. that's going to be a hard world. This is going to be some hard life lessons for a lot of people. And we're going to have to deal with intentional ignorance for many, many years to come. Let's just be honest about it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we do return, the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I got a question for you. Can we, because people are noticing that during, between the news break, we put up a thing saying, you know, back in a second here.
Mm-hmm.
If kids drew pictures, could we somehow get those on during the news at the top of the hour there?
Yeah, absolutely. We can do that. Yeah.
A kid could draw a picture.
We got to keep it a secret what you do between hours.
Yeah, well, let's just put it this way. Not my first pair of pants today. Anyway, maybe we need to do something like that. Have the kids. If you got a kid out there that wants to draw a picture, we'll feature it in the transition from the 4 o'clock hour to the 5 o'clock hour. At the top, we get done with that hour, we'll put it up there, and until we come back from the news, your kid's photo will be up on the live stream.
To expand on that, yeah, best way to do that, if you can scan in that image, send it to comment at am950radio.com. Yeah, we'll get that up between hours.
Get a good photo of it, get it scanned in over to us, send it over. Where do they send it to again?
Comment at am950radio.com.
952-946-6205. State officials have begun notifying seniors who were picked to receive the COVID-19 vaccines this week. More than 206,000 Minnesotans age 65 and over have registered to get the shot. That includes those who signed up for the state website or by phone on Tuesday, as well as 11,000 who were on the waiting list from the previous week. A total of 9,425 appointments were available this week at 9 state community testing sites. Now, I don't believe you have to register again. Once you've registered one time, eventually they will get to you and they'll get you a vaccine. People will be notified by text, email, or phone. No more than 2 attempts will be made if someone requested to be notified by telephone. Those who are not chosen to receive shots this week will remain on the registration list and eligible for a vaccine in future weeks. The Brooklyn Center and Blaine vaccination sites will give shots to seniors only. Sites in Fergus Falls, Mountain Iron, Thief River Falls, Sartell, North Mankato, Rochester, and Marshall will see both seniors and education and child care workers get their shots there. A new site in St. Paul will be dedicated to teachers and other school workers as well as child care employees. Altogether, 15,000 shots will be given to that group, which is being scheduled through a different system. Seniors who live in nursing homes or assisted living facilities are getting shots on site. So far, 301,290 Minnesotans, 290 Minnesotans have received at least one dose to COVID-19. We are now over 70,000, 74,721 have gotten both doses. And that's all those people over the age of 64, which is great news there. State health officials announced 18 COVID deaths, brand new, 851 new confirmed cases Wednesday. That brings the pandemic totals to 6,124 fatalities, 457,316 known cases. Those who died were between the ages of 54 and 100. Diagnostic laboratories reported 20,899 COVID-19 test results to state officials in Minnesota. There is the latest map you can look at that shows you your risk of getting coronavirus. Minnesota is once again now back to being the best state in the union. Some states, almost every, I mean, Georgia, every county is a high risk county right now for coronavirus. Minnesota is the best state. Now, I want to be careful how I say that because it's not like we're good. It's just, you know, we're not the beet red. We're more of orange and yellow, not the beet red on the map. If you look at the, I think it's either New York Times or Washington Post map, we are better than every other state, which includes North Dakota. This is amazing. You want to know how badly you managed your pandemic? Well, visit North Dakota. North Dakota could be well on their way to herd immunity against the coronavirus, as researchers at Columbia University believe more than 60% of the residents have already been infected. Jeez.
Nice. I was going to say, I heard that too. That's why, like, they're saying the vaccine might not even be effective there because so many people have had it.
Way to Jim Jones is up there, guys. But researchers who developed the model at Columbia cautioned that even though vaccination efforts were well underway, mask and social distancing precautions are still being needed throughout midsummer or later. Jeffrey Shaman, an epidemiologist at Columbia, believes more than 105 million Americans already could have been infected, well above the 25 million that had been reported, including more than 60% in North Dakota. Shaman's team has been studying the true incidence of infection, starting with the outbreak in China, and has estimated only 20% of cases are confirmed through testing. The vast majority are missed because people have no symptoms. Only mild symptoms are never bothered to get tested. I mean, I'm not going to criticize someone for not getting tested if they don't have any symptoms. I mean, I hope that's really a, you know, solid idea if you're going to have that. In North Dakota, 12.5% of the population tested positive. 12.5.
Those are the confirmed ones, right?
Yep, those are the ones that have tested
positive.
That's
still ridiculously high.
God, that is. That's insane. Meaning the number of people who actually have been infected is more like 62.5%, Shaman settled the forum. Per capita, your case numbers are highest of any state in the country, said South Dakota, lagging slightly behind. But reminder, and by the way, if you look at that map of the most dangerous places, South Dakota is nowhere near as safe as Minnesota. But Jen Carnahan wants us to be just like that. Just like that. We could go swim in the pool that the kids haven't been going to the bathroom in for the last 2 days, or we could go to South Dakota. Eee. Make sure the filtration systems are working. That's a kind of a scary analogy, but I'm going to stand by it. Stand by it. It looks like a classic outbreak, Shaman said. That being said, basically it's an experiment in getting herd immunity through natural infection. If the pandemic, I want to let make sure you let, you know, when we had the bubonic plague, that was herd immunity because we didn't know about vaccines or anything like that. That it still took out a wide percentage of the population. Herd immunity is the stupidest idea you could possibly have, but welcome to the Dakotas. If the pandemic dynamics in North Dakota continue on this path, the state should end up with 65 to 70% of the population infected, and they'll still insist they did a great job. Didn't we do a great job? Thank God the Democrats weren't in charge. Just idiots. Just idiots. Well, I can't. Just say all the people in Dakotas are idiots, because we've got some idiots here as well. The owner and an employee of a Mankato bar are accused of allowing an underage drinking party during the state-ordered indoor dining ban due to COVID-19. Pierre Sadaka, no relation to Neil, I'm guessing, of Madison Lake owns Charlie's Restaurant. Now, Charlie's Restaurant, remember when Bring Me the News was publishing restaurants that were getting caught with breaking the rule? Charlie's kept showing up on that list. Charlie's, he's charged with furnishing liquor to underage buyers, a gross misdemeanor, as well as a social host and violating the governor's emergency order, which are both misdemeanors. Meanwhile, an employee, 27-year-old Mario Barrios of Mankato, is charged with gross misdemeanor furnishing liquor to underage buyers, the Mankato Free Press reports. According to the criminal complaints against Sadaka, on December 4th, Mankato police officers responded to Charlie's on a complaint of a violation of Governor Wallace's executive orders that prohibited indoor in-person dining. The restaurant blinds were down, but there were several vehicles parked in the front of the restaurant. And in the back parking lot, charges state, when the officer went to the back door of Charlie's, they saw the door being held open by an employee. The officer spoke with Sadaka. The officer spoke with Sadaka. And I lost my place. There it is. Who initially refused to let the officer in the restaurant and then claimed he had a gathering of about 20 employees in the restaurant. The complaint says later Sadaka admitted that most of the people were patrons, not employees. The officer saw two beer pong tables and significant evidence of a large social gathering, including clear plastic glasses containing alcohol and solo cups scattered throughout the restaurant. Nice quality. Nothing tells me like a restaurant and bar I want to go eat at than solo cups. Dear Lord, man. God.
Well, if you're going to rack up the violations, yeah, I mean, go big or go home. Underage drinking, opening during a pandemic. I mean, come on.
Sadaka told the officer he was just trying to make it through this tough period. In total, the officer observed 20 to 30 people surrounding the bar with alcoholic beverages. No one was wearing face coverings, according to the allegations. Some patrons apparently appeared youthful in nature, charges state, noting all those who were 21 or older showed ID and were asked to leave the restaurant, while 8 people were given citations for underage consumption of alcohol. Sadaka admitted to investigators that he'd served alcohol to those who were at the gathering, but maintained he checked everyone's ID, noting the 8 underage people must have used fake IDs. Charges says he admitted that while he and Barrios served alcohol that night, he didn't intentionally service anyone under the age of 21. One of the patrons who was cited for underage drinking told the police that one or two people served drinks. Two others were also admitted to underage drinking, told police that no one verified their IDs at the door before serving them. Police confirmed Barrios, who is the one who served them. Sadaka, so he's lying about that. They didn't check their IDs. They just let a bunch of kids come in there, served them up, because the only thing that mattered to this guy was the money. And I'm going to come back to that in a second. Sadaka added that he was trying to stay in business and wouldn't make it without income revenue, charges said. By the way, on December 14th, Sadaka, after he had an underage drinking party in his establishment against the governor's orders, Sadaka acknowledged the police said restaurant shouldn't have been open, but desperate times called for desperate measures. On December 18th, Charlie posted on Facebook that he wouldn't be following through to defy Governor Walz's orders. So where are – I mean, I know there's a lot of rightos out there who are saying, Governor Walz has commands, his dictator Walz. So are you saying that we should ignore the fact that Charlie's was open and serving even though we should have been closed in the pandemic, but then be outraged by the underage drinking? Because both of those are rules. Both of those are rules that are set up. We don't allow underage drinking in bars and restaurants, something that clearly went on by the looks of it, with the okie dokie from the management of the facility. But here you are, you can't separate these two out. So what is it? Are you fine with underage drinking? Because this is what I've said, is that as much as you guys, I mean, we talked about Alibi has lost their food license, and so they were serving food without a license. Which, as much as all you people that like to defend Alibi are, would pick that hill to die on, the reality is if it was a black guy doing that and he didn't have a food license, you'd be like, they should shut him down and lock him up. How dare he jeopardize the community by serving food without a license? Same thing here. If it was a black, if this was a case where this was an owner who basically was catering to the right-wing crowd, they will come to defend him. But you can't sit and defend the underage drinking. So your argument is it's okay for the bar to violate one law but not the other. This is the problem with people who feel as if they can figure out what laws they do and don't want to follow. This is the problem, because this guy was probably enabled by rightos screaming, "You should open up your bar again." And maybe Rito did or didn't tell them to serve underage drinks, but this guy's like, "Well, I'm desperate for money. I'll take any money I can get. I don't care if they're underage." I don't know what his mentality was, but it sure does seem like he intentionally had people in there drinking underage. That's at least from the story I've read here. You can't just all of a sudden allow people to pick and choose what laws they want to follow. We have a society that's built on laws. You know that. I know you guys on the right know that, because whenever a black guy gets into trouble and there's an aggressive police officer who crosses the line, your first argument is our society has rules and you got to follow what cops say. That's what you say. So this is I think we're going to see more and more of this, because the right is encouraging people to say, you know what, I don't agree with this law. I think my 13-year-old child should be able to drive a car. I think that 12-year-olds should be able to smoke. I think that we should be able to, I'm not going to have a license or anything like this. I'm going to have a bar and restaurant in my own house. I'll make a few extra bucks. And once you start allowing people to dictate what rules they do and do not follow, well, you've lost control. How about we say it like that? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, go get that calendar. It is over at the AM 950 webpage, am950radio.com. Go to the membership tab. Click on that, and you can find out how you can get the calendar. It's a $50 one-time donation to the station or a $25 recurring donation. We send you the calendar. It's got a lot of pretty pictures. I've actually started taking more pictures already for this year. I don't know if we're going to do another calendar next year, but we are definitely keeping that in mind. Needless to say, go over, check it out. It is at am950radio.com, am950radio.com. And thank you, thank you, thank you to all the people who have become members for helping out AM 950. It is an absolute privilege to be with you guys. That is for sure. 952-946-6205. Okay, so here you go. A Minnesota Senate panel on Wednesday advanced a measure that would create a voter identification requirement for the state less than a decade after Minnesota voters rejected a similar proposal on the ballot in 2012. Now, I want to remind people, Republicans insisted that Democrats, they're out of control with this voting stuff. We're going to put it to the people. And this was the same year they put out the anti-gay marriage amendment. And by the way, if I can make a point here, and I said this back then, back in the old 6 o'clock hour show, if the Republicans would have put both of those initiatives on the 2011 ballot, they probably would have both passed pretty handily. But instead, they waited till 2012 because they wanted to try to help the Republicans win the state of Minnesota in the presidential election. And if you remember back then, there was a lot of states that were putting ballot initiatives on the ballot to try to push an agenda to try to help out their numbers. And by the way, Barack Obama, spoiler alert, won a second term. And both these initiatives failed. And in both cases, they failed pretty solidly. So 8 years ago, many of these same Republicans put this to the voters, and the voters said no. And here they are yet once again trying to find some way to stop people from voting legally in the state of Minnesota. That's what they're trying to do. State Senator Scott Newman, Republican of Hutchinson, proposed a new state law that would require voters to present identification before registering to vote and also in the polls. Voters without an acceptable form of identification would be giving a provisional ballot. And it should be mentioned that basically is taking your vote and throwing it in the trash. For you to basically for a provisional ballot to be counted, you would have to, within a certain time frame, go over, have them find your ballot, prove that it was, and I mean, there's usually an insane amount of steps that these Republicans put into place to get a ballot from a provisional ballot back onto the rolls, and most people don't do it. And that's why they basically, that's why they love provisional ballots, is because it allows them, if, you know, to basically, you know, throw out a bunch of votes and help their chances. Because remember, Republicans, they don't do too well when everyone votes. The measure, which advanced in the lunatic fringe Republican Senate on a 5-3 party line vote, is unlikely to become law this session because the House has no intention of passing a voter ID law. The debate on Wednesday grew heated when Secretary of State Steve Simon, the state's top elections official, pushed back against the measure, saying it contributes to the mistaken belief that widespread voter fraud cost former President Trump the election. Dozens of lawsuits alleging fraud were thrown out of the courts and across the country, and hand recounts in places like Georgia confirmed the final vote tallies were nearly identical to early counts. And by the way, it should be mentioned that all the trials, all these court cases that were thrown out, they were thrown out because there was no evidence of any wrongdoing. The Republican argument was that they thought something was wrong. And when you get to court, if you don't have evidence, they're not about to start throwing out elections just because you don't like the outcome. So after months of stroking that baseless claim, a mob of pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol earlier this month. It should be mentioned there are Republicans. I think there were some Republicans that voted for this that signed onto the Paxton law, bill, that letter to the Supreme Court, trying to get the Supreme Court to just throw out votes across the country, and the Republicans wanted just to, because they just didn't like the outcome, they wanted to throw out the votes for president only, not the rest of the ballot. The rest of the ballot they were happy with because they held the Senate, but get rid of the president votes because those are the fraudulent ones. Okie dokie. The attempted insurrection led to a second impeachment of the president. Newman and State Senator Mary Kiffmeyer of Big Lake, who chairs the committee, vociferously pushed back against Simon's testimony, saying they took offense that he cast aspersions on their motivation for supporting the legislation. Oh, let me cast aspersions. You two clowns, Mary Kiffmeyer and Newman, you two clowns, you're doing this because you lost and you're sore losers. And so you're now desperately trying to find some way to throw millions of Minnesotans off the voter ranks. And Steve Simon, the Secretary of State, is calling you on your bull crap, and you don't like it. Well, poor little boo-boo kitties. Poor little boo-boo kitties. During questioning from State Senator David Osmek, the Ork, who made up this committee? You got the Ork, you got Kiffmeyer, you got Newman? My God. During questioning from State Senator Dave Osmek, who demanded a yes or no answer from Simon on whether election fraud happens, Simon attempted to explain that the answer was complicated before he finished answering. Kiffmeyer interjected. The question is quite straightforward, Kiffmeyer said. Simon retorted, Madam Chair, you are not the question cop. Boom! Damn! That is, wow. That, man, that is a rump roast you just cooked up there. Holy cow. With all the fixins. Oh, my God. You aren't the question cop. I think I'm sorry. That's a standing O for that one there. All right, beautiful. Well done, Secretary of State Steve Simon. Well done indeed. Bravo. Can someone Photoshop a picture of Mary Kiffmeyer with a hat on that has a QC for question cop? I don't have Photoshop skills.
Yeah.
I'm not an artist, but if you can, I take pictures. I can't, you know, alter them too much.
I think the Riddler's got to be the base of this image.
The question cop.
Yeah, yeah, with a little top hat on him. Yeah, yeah.
Damn, that's cold, man. Damn, that's cold. That was nice. Madam Chair, you are not the question cop. Oh, God. Oh, wow. I think we're all done here. We have to do the rest of the show? I mean, it's 12 minutes left. I guess we do, I guess. Wow. If you can Photoshop a picture of Mary Kiffmeyer with a police cop hat on or something like that, Riddler-esque or not, with a QC for question cop. Oh, I will make sure I share that everywhere. Thanks. Kiffmeyer then admonished Simon. Oh no, you're trying to win a football game. You just lost to, you know, you got lost. You got beat. You got smoked. He's saying he needed to respect the committee process and maintain decorum. Now, mind you, she interrupted his answer to basically berate him, and he smacked her back so damn hard. Once her head started to stop spinning around, she basically, how dare you? Hey, Mary, shut up. Hey, Kiffmeyer, shut up. You're just a horrible human being. Remember, when you talk about decorum, do you remember the temper tantrum you threw because Fort Snelling decided to call itself Bedote, the traditional Native American word for the area? Something we kind of say already with Mendota through bad translation from the French and the English. But needless to say, Bedote is what it was called. And you didn't show much decorum there, nor have you shown any real decorum when it comes to respecting the Secretary of State. So you deserve that. You deserve that. Oh, how'd that taste, Mary? How'd that taste? The measure now moves to the Senate Transportation Committee, which Newman chairs. Voting rights advocates say ID requirements are a burden to people who can't get the paperwork to obtain one. Basically, it's about throwing people off because it's not – it's basically about trying to create hoops to jump through. And what – I mean, and of course, they're not going to put the money into this bill. They're Republicans. They're not going to put the money into this bill for IDs for people that don't have driver's licenses. You know, what about elderly people that don't have a driver's license anymore? Are you going to get them an ID? Well, they should have an ID. Well, no, what if they don't? I mean, are you going to have the state all of a sudden pick up the money for all these IDs? Mary, just quit. Seriously, seriously, sweetheart. Madam Chair, you are not the question cop. Damn. Nicely done, Steve Simon. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is cold on some of these committee hearings, isn't it? It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Damn. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Damn, that was a nice smack back. Oh, and I can just see Kiffmeyer furious at him. Yeah, once you get some decorum, then you can start questioning other people, Mary Kiffmeyer. Once you start getting some decorum, then you can start questioning others. Larry is in Minneapolis, wants to chime in this afternoon. Welcome on in, Larry.
Hi there, Matt.
Hey.
I just wanted to shout out a big buck, buck, buck to all the 14 Minnesota legislators that were afraid to vote on a simple resolution, up or down, yes or no, on the condemning of the insurrection earlier this month.
Eight Republicans voted no for some reason, saying that holding these people accountable is not a good idea for some reason. And 14 absolute total coward Republicans didn't even vote.
Yep, buck, buck, buck.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate that. Those were the House representatives when they brought that bill up. But hey, you know, if you can't condemn Nazis and white supremacists and terrorists and traitors, good luck with all that. Good luck with all that. And by the way, the next time any Republican, any of these Republicans, demand, when are the Democrats going to condemn Antifa? The first thing out of your mouth is going to be, oh, as soon as you condemn the people that attacked the Capitol. Because remember, you didn't even vote one way or the other, you freaking cowards. I'm not going to condemn. If you don't have the ability to condemn people trying to overthrow the federal government, I sure as heck am not going to entertain your fantasies about Antifa. 952-946-6205. The city of Minneapolis has settled the first lawsuit by a demonstrator injured by a police projectile in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. The city council, and by the way, there's going to be a lot of these. You know why? Because the clown cops in Minneapolis, they seem to be firing these rounds off like they were at the state fair trying to win themselves a Van Halen mirror, for God's sakes. City council officially approved a payment of $57,900 to Garcela Cisneros and her attorneys. Mayor Fry officially signed off on the payout last Tuesday. Cisneros, if you are someone who doesn't like to have to waste public taxpayer dollars, then you should be wanting reforms with the Minneapolis police. Because of the actions of the Minneapolis police, the only recourse these people have is to sue the city. And they win these cases, and they're going to win every single one of these cases. And it's going to cost the taxpayers of Minneapolis millions and millions of dollars. And you don't see the Republicans getting upset about that. You won't hear any Republican ever commenting on that. It's just disgusting. Cisneros, 22, suffered an eye injury. And by the way, I don't advise you to take a look at the image of the picture. It's a rough one. She suffered an eye injury when a police officer fired a projectile at her on May 29th as she and her partner were walking home after a demonstration. Right now, she is looking like she's recovered, said Nico Ratowski, her St. Paul attorney. The settlement made sense based on what my client and what the city were willing to do. The city has confronted a large demonstration and civil unrest after the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police on May 25th. Four police officers are being charged with the killing of Floyd. The incident, by the way, was captured by New York-based photographer Victor Blue, whose photos were published in the New York Times. I still experience a lot of nightmare terrors. Kuthelith, I'll go with Erica, 21, an accounting administrator from Plymouth. She was yanked from her car at gunpoint by a Minneapolis officer who pushed her on the pavement on May 31st. That suit is still, that's a second federal lawsuit that Ratowski is working on behalf of, suing the city. I still experience a lot of night terrors, said Erica in an interview. I have frequent nightmares and I have very bad dreams. Cisneros, who declined to be interviewed, was an Augsburg University student living in Eagan. She was walking with her partner, Ricardo Ramos Jr., after attending a May 29th march to protest the Floyd killing when they encountered three officers at South 1st near East 28th in Minneapolis. One of the officers shined a flashlight at them and another fired his weapon, launching a non-lethal projectile at her face. None of the officers offered to help her, the suit says. No, that's pretty much on brand. You know, once again, a lot of police officers out there do a very good job. They have a tough job and they do it. Minneapolis cops, it's been a culture run by the police union over there where this kind of crap is acceptable. And I saw case after case. They targeted the media after that. After they basically the National Guard went and took power away from them in Minneapolis. The reality is that every one of these officers should be forced to have to explain their actions in public to the people. And the taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for this. The police union should be on the hook for all of these dollars. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Native Roots Radio up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.